Fitted with a bump stock, the shooter simply places his trigger finger on the built-in finger ledge and uses his other hand to press the front of the rifle forward. As long as the shooter maintains that steady forward pressure, the rifle will fire continuously until it runs out of bullets, and it will empty a 100-round magazine like the ones used in the Las Vegas shooting in about 10 seconds. Those weapons do exactly what Congress meant to prohibit when it enacted the prohibition on machine guns, and those weapons are machine guns because they satisfy both disputed parts of the statutory definition.
This is Brian Fletcher. He is the Principal Deputy Solicitor General from the Department of Justice. That means he's the second in command for the guy who's going to argue all of the cases representing the United States of America, the Department of Justice, talking about the bump stock ban that the ATF implemented with regards to certain non-mechanical devices that facilitate so-called bump firing. And I will tell you that having listened to the oral argument for the Supreme Court on this topic and re-listened to it as I cut the cuts and trying to understand all the things that are involved in this, this is actually a really interesting case. It's a lot more interesting than maybe you would have thought. But let me have him say last kind of like opening arguments. A lot of times the opening argument by each side gives you a lot of insight into what the case is really going to be about. He goes on to say,
first, a rifle with a bump stock fires more than one shot by a single function of the trigger. In common usage today, as in 1934, a function of the trigger happens when some act by the shooter, usually a pull, starts a firing sequence. With a semi-automatic rifle, it fires one shot for each function of the trigger because the shooter has to manually pull and release the trigger for every shot. But a bump stock eliminates those manual movements and allows the shooter to fire many shots with one act, a forward push.
Okay. There's a lot there in terms of just the physics of what's happening. And understanding the physics of what's happening in so-called bump stock firing or bump firing is essential to understanding this case. First of all, you have to understand that there are several different kinds of a bump firing. And not to go into too much detail on it, but for example, if you have a spring-activated bump stock, or what they call an Atkins device, I think is the term they use for it, that would have, so you hold the gun, okay, a semi-automatic gun. When you pull the trigger, the gun itself pushes back against you, equal and opposite reaction to the force of the bullet being expired or being expelled, okay? In a bump stock, in your shoulder, it's got a spring, and it pushes the gun back off of your body into your finger again so that your finger pushes the one time, and then the gun basically fires itself against your finger with a spring. That's not in dispute. Even the plaintiffs in this case agree that is a machine gun. Now, you can quibble with that, and you can argue with that, but that's what even the plaintiffs in this case agree is a machine gun. Second, the one in dispute at this case is not that. It's instead a kind of a sleeve that you would put the gun into that allows the gun to just move back and forth. And instead of a spring pushing the gun into your trigger finger, your front hand, your left hand on the barrel, you actually hold, you take the gun, you hold your left hand, the barrel in your left hand, and your right hand on the trigger. And then you actually, instead of pulling the trigger, you push the gun so that the gun fires itself against your trigger finger. And by holding forward pressure on the barrel, when the gun recoils, your front hand fights the recoil and functions as the spring would. So your left hand is pulling the gun continuously back and forth against your trigger finger. That's the current bump stock that's under discussion. Now, interestingly, you can actually do this without a device. If you just take an AR-15, for example, or, I mean, any other semi-automatic rifle, even some pistols, you could do this with. If you took it and held it in your hand, just kind of loosely, not up against your shoulder, because that would sort of defeat the action that needs to happen. If you held it finger against the trigger and hand on the muzzle or on the barrel, and instead of pulling on the trigger, you pushed with the barrel, it would fire once, recoil, and if you kept pushing it, it would fire again. Okay, that's bump firing without a device of any kind, whether mechanical, spring-loaded, or non-mechanical, as in this case. There are all kinds of other devices that people use to make the gun fire more quickly. There's a, they call it a fishing reel. People use rubber bands. People use force reset triggers are another one that they use. And each one is different mechanically in how it makes the gun fire faster. Okay, so that's part one. That's what's under discussion. Part two is the definition of a machine gun, according to USC 26, Chapter 53. This is a 1930 law, and it says a machine gun means any weapon which shoots, is designed to shoot, or can be readily restored to shoot automatically. That's important, automatically. More than one shot without manual reloading by a single function of the trigger. Single function of the trigger is also very important. A weird phrase. Not a single pull of the trigger, not a single push of the trigger, but a single function of the trigger. What is a function of the trigger? Well, they argued about this in the Supreme Court for an hour and a half. The term shall also include the frame or receiver of any such weapon, any part designed and intended solely and exclusively or combination of parts designed and intended for use in converting a weapon into a machine gun, and any combination of parts from which a machine gun can be assembled if such parts are in the possession or under the control of a person. So that leads to the case in front of the Supreme Court, again with the sleeve, not mechanical. Your front hand is doing the work to push the gun against your trigger finger, but it functions within this sleeve or slide mechanism. Think about how your, like a plate glass door slides along in a ledge within a frame. Something similar to that, although obviously not glass and not that big. Okay, so the argument is going to be, number one, is the gun itself... is the gun firing multiple rounds because you do one thing, like pull a trigger, or is the gun firing multiple rounds because you have to do again and again and again pull the trigger? That's the argument. That's the discussion. And all of everything hangs on that. Also, is it automatically doing it? Or do you have to keep manually inputting against the machine? And that's the whole distinction. The state, the federal government, the ATF, decided, after several administrations who believed that this particular kind of weapon was not, this particular modification for the weapon was not a machine gun, under the Trump administration, they decided that it was. And Neil Gorsuch, Supreme Court Justice, asks, why should the ATF suddenly be able to decide that a quarter of a million or more Americans are just felons?
I can certainly understand why these items should be made illegal. But we're dealing with a statute that was enacted in the 1930s. And through many administrations, the government took the position that these bump stocks are not machine guns. And then you adopted an interpretive rule, not even a legislative rule, saying otherwise, that would render between a quarter of a million and a half million people federal felons. And not even through an APA process they could challenge, subject to 10 years in federal prison. And the only way they can challenge it is if they're prosecuted. And they may well wind up dispossessed of guns, all guns in the future, as well as a lot of other civil rights, including the right to vote.
Because it's a felony.
And I guess I just want your reaction to that.
And Fletcher's answer is, well, look, the Supreme Court itself often tells the administration that they've understood the law wrong. And so why can't we tell the administration, or be the administration, to tell the American people or Congress that they've understood the law wrong?
Court often concludes that the government has interpreted a statute the wrong way and doesn't hesitate to correct the government's mistakes. I think the government should do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's his argument. So Neil Gorsuch follows up with, well, why not change the law? Isn't that a better way to go? Since, again, you're creating so many felons. And also this question of, well, who reads these statutes? Can people even be reasonably expected to know that this is the law? And, you know, they kind of got into a funny back and forth about that with Neil Gorsuch and Brian Fletcher.
The problem here, we acknowledge, is ATF used to say something different about these, but we think that's taken care of by the rulemaking and the doctrine of entrapment by itself.
Because people will sit down and read the Federal Register.
No, I think because people who have these
devices... That's what they do in their evening for fun. You know, gun owners across the country crack it open next to the fire and the dog.
I take that point. I think...
Because if people can't be reasonably expected to understand, or if they could be reasonably expected to understand it at one time, make a decision to buy something that they think is legal, and then the law changes, I mean, how are they even going to know about this? And so basically, okay, the argument here is, have you done a fair job of informing people? And is the process of not changing the law and not even going through one of the regular processes for making a change in interpretation of the law, but this kind of secondary side process. Now, this didn't feature heavily in the argument, so I don't know that it's going to be important in the end discussion, but you have a lot of sort of secondary level issues in this case. Now, one of the things about this has to do with the what the statute actually prohibits as opposed to what you might think it prohibits. The statute does not prohibit rate of fire. So a gun that fires really fast, what you think of as, well, that's a machine gun, right? That's not what the statute prohibits. You can have a gun that fires really fast, and if it doesn't run afoul of this particular definition, again, a single function of the trigger versus multiple functions of the trigger, automatic versus non-automatic behavior by the weapon, it's not illegal. And this actually is important to understand because different guns fire at different rates. In fact, I actually give a lot of credit to the Supreme Court justices. I was expecting that at least several of the Supreme Court justices would not understand this issue. And even I, in listening to it, I had to learn things about these weapons that I thought I knew and didn't fully know. They actually understood things fairly well, and I appreciate that they were trying to understand what they didn't know and doing a good job of digesting the information. Elena Kagan specifically asked at one point, well, how fast does this, does it really make a difference, Because you can fire pretty quickly just holding your finger on the trigger and go back and forth, fluttering it, so to speak. You can fire pretty quickly. Versus if you have a fully automatic weapon, the kind that you have to have a special license in order to have, or if you were in the military, you'd have issued to you automatically. And where along that spectrum do these devices allow a gun to operate at?
Could you give a sense of the different effects of these various devices? So you take on two poles, a semi-automatic weapon, let's say, and a conventional machine gun on the other. How many bullets in how much time? And then one of these bump stock weapons, where does that fall in the spectrum between those?
Sure. So the rate of a semi-automatic weapon is not a fixed number because it depends both on the weapon and very much on the skill of the shooter. I think the Giffords amicus brief says the theoretical maximum for a very skilled competition shooter with a specialized weapon is something like 180 bullets a minute. In practice, it's much, much slower than that for the vast majority of people who would use one of these things. A fully automatic weapon.
How much slower?
I think, it depends, I think, more on the order of, 60, something like that. I don't want to represent that that's exact, again, because there's a lot of variation. But the point is, that's the theoretical max in practice, significantly slower than that.
Okay, so he's saying 3 a second is kind of the theoretical maximum for somebody who's a very skilled trigger operator, that they can very quickly move their finger back and forth against the trigger. And he says about 60 a minute for an unskilled person. I think that number is quite a bit higher if you're unskilled, probably more like 100 to 120. He's right. It's hard to get above 200 if you don't know what you're doing, which is obviously still a lot of bullets. And in average, a magazine, typical magazine carries 30 for like a 5.56 or an AR-15 style weapon. You can get bigger ones. They start to be unwieldy at a certain point and they're super heavy. 30 is a lot, but you can go through, for example, a 30-round magazine in, if you're doing 1 a second, it's 30 seconds. I don't think it's going to be that slow. If it's 2 a second, it's 15 seconds. That's probably more realistic. And, it matters whether you're selecting targets in between or whether you're just randomly firing, like, from a hotel room into a crowd, right? It's just kind of the horrible classic example that we're all familiar with. But he goes on for the other weapons.
A traditional machine gun like the M16 or the M14, things that are issued to members of the American military, shoots in the range of 700 to 950 bullets a minute. There are obviously bigger things like the things mounted on helicopters that shoot much, much faster than that. But I think for these purposes, that 700 to 900 is about the right benchmark. The Aikens Accelerator, the original bump stock, shot at 650 rounds a minute. And the devices at issue here are represented to shoot between 400 and 800 rounds a minute. So right in that range with the M16, the M14.
So understanding that it does a lot to accelerate the rate of fire, but the question is not going to be the rate of fire. The question is going to be, does it fall against the definition of a machine gun? Now, I did something yesterday as I spent some time watching videos and grabbing audio of all different kinds of rates of fire just so you could know the difference. This is not going to determine the outcome of the case. And whether you think machine guns should just be illegal to everybody or should be legal to everybody under the Second Amendment, that's not going to affect the outcome of this case. It is going to be two things. Does the bump stock, Does it actually work under the definition of machine gun? And number two, if it does, did the ATF still violate appropriate policies and procedures by the way they made them illegal? So here, just for an example, so you understand the difference. This is an M. This is actually an M16. It was a guy. An M16 is the military version. It's capable of fully automatic fire. The AR-15 is the civilian version. It's not available to fire automatically. This is that gun firing just a couple of rounds just on regular speed. The audio program is working a little bit weird today. So that was here. There you go. That's firing regular speed. This is an AR-15. This is an expert shooter working on targets, switching targets and firing as fast as he possibly can, single shot. That's 18 shots of a guy moving between targets, a very, very, very skilled operator, okay? Here's another guy, same thing, skilled operator, firing as much as he can, pulling the trigger every time. So you can go through a lot of bullets really fast with no device whatsoever. Okay, and here's just, this is a guy firing, I said manually bump firing, like no device, just holding it loosely and pushing the gun into his finger with his left hand. Very fast. Something like twice to three times as fast, right? Okay, here's a guy who's learning how to fire a bump stock with not a spring, so he's not done this before. Faster, right? This is what's called a forced reset trigger. This is a device that pushes the trigger back against your finger, but you actually do have to pull it separately every time. It's just, it's a very, very small motion. So instead of the big motion of pull and reset, you just kind of flutter your finger, your trigger finger against it. And he's learning also.
Bro, what?
And these have been deemed legal. Right now. Well, there's some controversy over it. So maybe, maybe not illegal. And just for comparison's sake, this is an M16 fully automatic. Okay? So let me put it this way. I don't know how the case is going to shake out. I suspect strongly the Supreme Court is going to rule that these devices are illegal because several of the Supreme Court justices, based on their questions, seem to lean in that direction. Whether they do or do not deem them to be illegal, it's just true that a semi-automatic weapon can be fired really fast a lot of different ways, even with no device whatsoever. But it's also true that none of these devices really come close to fully automatic fire in their rate of fire. 437-1620. I'm Andrew McKay.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Oh, this cold.
Honey?
Honey?
Honey, you need DayQuil Severe Honey.
DayQuil Severe Honey gives you powerful cold and flu symptom relief with a honey-licious taste. Because life doesn't stop for a cold.
Okay, I'm ready to go.
Now I'm getting a cold.
Honey.
Try DayQuil Severe Honey for powerful cold and flu relief. DayQuil Severe with honey flavor. The daytime coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, honey-licious, power through your day, medicine. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZQuil.
ZQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZQuil.com.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
News Radio 92.3 gets you live programming every day from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 529 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Let's go right to David Wayne, who's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Vice President Kamala Harris meeting with Israeli War Cabinet member Benny Gantz today at the White House. This is a day after she called for an immediate ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. A White House official says she'll be reiterating that civilian casualties must be reduced. Massachusetts Air National Guard member Jack Teixeira is expected to plead guilty today to charges related to the leaking of military secrets. A change of plea hearing scheduled to take place in Boston federal court. Teixeira is accused of posting classified military information to a group of gamers on social media. And President Biden delivering the State of the Union address on Thursday. A preview of that speech says he'll be outlining how he's making the wealthy pay their fair share.
All right, very good. Thanks so much, David. Also, we are expecting, I'm sure the bottom of the hour Fox is going to talk about this, we're expecting a ruling today from the Supreme Court on the eligibility of President Trump to be on the Colorado ballot. This is under the 14th Amendment disqualification for participation in an insurrection argument. And I told you before that I think it's incredibly likely that the Supreme Court is going to say something to the effect that he will be able to be on the ballot, probably by at least a 7-2, maybe a 9-0 opinion.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. There's an unusual announcement from the Supreme Court that an opinion will be released this morning, even though the court is not in session.
Speculation is growing that it could be over whether Colorado is allowed to kick Donald Trump off of its primary ballot. The former president will appear on more than a dozen primary ballots during tomorrow's Super Tuesday contest. That does include Colorado.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer. Vice President Harris meets at the White House today with a top Israeli war cabinet official, Benny Gantz. She's calling on Hamas to accept a ceasefire in the war that started with terrorist attacks in Israel.
Our hearts break for the victims of that horrific tragedy and for all the innocent people in Gaza who are suffering from what is clearly a humanitarian catastrophe.
The vice president in Selma, Alabama, commemorating civil rights demonstrations in 1965. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. It is 64 degrees right now. Partly cloudy skies this morning in Pensacola. One person was killed, another critically hurt in a motorcycle crash over the weekend in Escambia County. Now, this happened on Saturday afternoon. FHP says the motorcycle was trying to make a turn onto West Detroit Boulevard, but instead crashed into a tree line. A 58-year-old Alabama woman was riding as a passenger on that bike. She died at the scene of the crash. The driver was taken to Baptist Hospital with critical injuries. FHP is still investigating that crash. The Century Town Council has rescheduled one of their March meetings because of the state Republican primary election. Now, they normally meet every first and third Tuesday of the month. They'll meet as normal tomorrow. However, their March 19th meeting will be rescheduled to the 20th. As their council chambers is a polling location in the town. Well, somewhere up above the Space Coast this morning is a capsule carrying four people to the International Space Station. The NASA SpaceX Crew 8 mission launched last night from the Kennedy Space Center. Three men and a woman are on board. They'll spend 6 months at the International Space Station conducting about 200 different experiments. They're expected to dock at the space station on Tuesday morning at 3 o'clock. A man has died after a shooting on a public bus in Miami-Dade County. Now, this happened on Saturday in Florida City. Two passengers apparently were arguing, and Miami-Dade Fire Rescue says 25-year-old Martavis Cannon was killed. Another man was arrested. He claimed self-defense, but police say surveillance video showed Cannon was unarmed and had his hands up when he was shot. The 28-year-old man now is charged with second-degree murder with a deadly weapon. And Republicans can start voting for their presidential nominee as early as today. The GOP primary is underway with early voting, and that'll run through March 17th. You do have until Thursday to request that ballot. Voting day on the 19th, and Democrats not having a primary, of course, because the party only submitted one candidate, President Joe Biden. Get more information on the primary at dos.fl.gov. It is 534 News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be seeing a nice and foggy start to the morning. Fog possible, especially along the coastline. High today near 73 degrees with a chance of some isolated showers. Overnight tonight, rain chance will increase with a low near 64. Wet into the day and a wet start to your Tuesday. 90% chance of rain on Tuesday. High on Tuesday near 68 degrees and a low near 60 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And 64 in Pensacola, 63 in Gulf Breeze, 64 in Milton. Your next news at 6 o'clock. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne. News Radio 92.3.
Throughout our history,
I believe the time has come to bring that investigation and the other investigations of this matter to an end. 1 year of Watergate is enough.
Presidents have delivered the annual State of the Union address.
And I must say to you that the State of the Union is not good.
President Biden will give his third State of the Union address. Hear it live Thursday at 8 p.m. along with the Republican rebuttal by Alabama Senator Katie Britt on News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Exciting news, the data revolution is on the rise once again. Data Revolution is seeking a second-tier engineer with at least 2 to 3 years of experience in IT, networks, voice over IP, and cybersecurity. Data Revolution's competitive salary is based on experience, and their comprehensive benefit packages include a medical stipend, matching 401k, flexible work hours, starting with 3 weeks of PTO, 10 paid holidays, profit sharing, and more. This is not remote or work from home. To learn more about this opportunity, send your resume to resume@datarevs.com.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters this Wednesday on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 9. They'll be talking about Easter, Angelina's Supper Club, jazz at Jackson's, and other fun things you won't want to miss. That's all Wednesday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel with Great Southern Restaurants.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
All the big national news in a conversation with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins from 11 till 2 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Might be that our Alex Andrade segment is actually my favorite music of the week because you get to hear all this throwback 80s, you know, frat rap, which I love. I mean, I do. I really love. Grew up on this stuff. All right. So on Friday, we had a chance to talk to Alex Andrade, your state representative for District 2. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
1 week to go. How excited are you?
I'm very excited. I'm still not sure if I can go home this weekend, so. I'm very excited to be able to go home definitively when that handkerchief drops on Sunday night. So, can't wait.
Well, you know, you and I were chatting a little bit off the air, and you were kind of telling me that, you know, it's budget conference right now, which is figuring out how to get the House and the Senate aligned on budget so they can submit it to the governor and then cross your fingers that he doesn't give you too many redactions. What is your, like, day schedule like right now? Because people probably have no idea, and I always find that kind of thing interesting. I know they always ask me my schedule, and when I tell them, they kind of can't believe it. But what's your schedule like during session during this last week of budget negotiations?
Well, so I'm the chair of a big budget. So so my life has been, working through our spreadsheets for my approximately, you know, $21 billion budget silo. Last night I was, working with our incredible staff until about 2 a.m., trying to figure out a couple movements in our budget spreadsheet before we essentially at this point we've identified the universe of dollar amounts to settle out my budget with the Senate. So since we know the overall total dollar amount, we know that there's nothing else in there that is has to be a specific number, otherwise they'll reject it. We took that universe, we split it in half, and we each went back to our offices, my Senate counterpart and myself, and we just figured out how we were going to allocate our half of that universe. And so then we'll take our spreadsheets, we'll overlap them again, and hopefully we'll have a budget. So it's just been, I was at the office till 2 a.m. I got to head back right after this interview to try and get this done so that, like, not only I can go home, but everybody else can go home, because we have to publish our budgets for 72 hours before we can even vote on them.
So you were up till 2, you got up to do this interview, our weekly interview, and then right after this, you're going back to the Capitol, go back to work on budget. Just an easy part-time job, no big deal. So much fun. You've got bills you're still working on. A couple of your bills are not going to make it. That happens every year. The HB 177, the ticket regulation bill to try to chip away against the monopoly power that the Ticketmaster bill has. The defamation bill looks like it's not going to make it. Are these both things you think you might bring back next year? Or?
I don't really know. Like, I've never. You'll never catch me mourning the death of a bill. In this process, if you're not willing to kill your own bills, like, you're not able to, you know, you're going to struggle and have a bad time. I like the ticket bill. I might bring it back if a different, chairs are in different committees. I was joking with the Commerce Committee chair. His name is Bob Rommel yesterday, and this was actually kind of funny. So a reporter in a hallway while I was rushing to a meeting was like, "Hey, why'd your ticket bill die?" And I was like, "I don't know. Bob Rommel hated it." and he quoted me in an article. And so and Bob sits right in front of me on the floor. Bob didn't care at all, but every time I say, "Bob, you probably have the highest body count of any chair of, like, my dead bills." 'Cause, like, Bob, he holds the record of the person who's killed more of my bills than anybody else. And his response every time, though, is just like, "You should probably file a better bill." You know, like, we just have an honest, you know,
you want to win more? Harder.
Yeah. Just file better bills, Andrade.
That answer.
That's something that we can just joke about, because, again, I mean, yeah, no, I file bills, I try and pass them, I do my best, but if there's something that's out of my control that I can't change, there's always next year until I term out. So I might do the ticket stuff again if I can figure out something with defamation that the Senate might take. I might bring that back. You know, I passed more committees this year. We had a little bit more time, but I'm also not the person to demand that a bill be heard on the House floor if I know it's dead on the Senate. So I put that binder up for defamation. I won't be delivering that stuff on the floor, because I'd just be wasting everybody's time on the floor for no reason.
Oh, good for you, man, because there are bills like that that we are wasting time on that are not going to happen in the Senate, like the whole – you know, the gay driver's licenses, or the gender on driver's licenses bill, and the, you know, gender reassignment surgery or whatever. Like, the Senate hasn't even picked that up at all. What are you guys doing? Such a waste of time. But, you know, I actually appreciate that, saving us all from having to watch these sort of futile discussions. The vaping bill we talked about last week, I actually listened to one of the committee hearings on this, and I would vote no on this bill. I'm certainly no fan of smoking or vaping, but I hear the arguments and take them seriously. You had said last time we talked that you thought this bill might not actually do well on the floor, but it's getting up for third reading. Is it going to pass?
I think it might pass, but, like, I won't be voting for it, and I know several other people might not as well. I need to double check. I've been out of it. Like, I know for a fact we did not vote on it yesterday.
Yeah, there's no vote history yet,
right? Or not. I don't know if it was TP, temporarily postponed, yesterday or not. Because a lot were on special order yesterday for second reading that were temporarily postponed. So I'll need to get double check that for today.
Okay.
But today I have my I think last bill on government accountability to present on second reading. So I'll have one bill to present before I go back and try and finish the budget.
Okay. I know, you know, you're aware we've been talking all day yesterday about the Supreme Court hearing on a bill that you did in part help author, the social media transparency bill. And by my read of the Supreme Court, they seemed more friendly to viewing Twitter and Facebook and YouTube as common carriers when it came to people having accounts or posting content. I think they lean towards viewing it as protected speech when Florida tries to regulate the algorithm feed or presentation of those materials to other people, the like shadow banning kind of issue. You know, I don't know in all your budget stuff if you had a chance to pay attention to the Supreme Court hearing at all, but I wondered, you know, you're a lawyer, obviously very well familiar with all of these issues. Did you have any thoughts on what the Supreme Court looked at in terms of how you read it or what you think is going to happen with that law?
Well, if I'm a social media platform's attorney or long-term investment planner, I'm listening to that wondering what exactly is going to happen to Section 230, depending on this ruling, because the whole concept of, you know, the federal government's institution of liability protections is that these platforms are not engaging in speech. They are not publishing. They're just allowing other people to you know, comment, say things, and those people should be liable. In this context, I've only heard the clips that you've played, Andrew, on your show, but when they're saying they're engaging in speech, they're engaging in their own editorial activity the whole time, I'm saying, well, then why are you entitled to Section 230 protections for against liability? I mean, like, you are actively engaging and promoting and moving the needle on who has eyeballs on what. And it goes directly to the damages somebody might suffer in any type of case that you could be sued over that you can't right now. I think this decision could have significant long-term ramifications.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And what I think might happen is that the Supreme Court might say you can't regulate the news feed because that's speech. But the questioning was, but you then are going to have to forfeit your Section 230 protection for whatever happens on the feed, because if that's speech, it's not protected. It's your stuff and you can't have it both ways. No, I totally agree with that analysis. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2. He's back onto the budgets here momentarily as he took a break to spend a little bit of time with us. Alex, I always appreciate the time you carve out during session for us, and we'll talk to you again next week or between now and then if anything important happens. But thank you for serving. Thank you for spending so much time away from your wife and your kid. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. 437-1620. By the way, over the weekend, Governor DeSantis did veto HB 1. HB 3, that's the age identification for access to online pornography. That one is coming back on its own. I would expect that to sail through the Senate and the House on an expedited path today and tomorrow. And then the HB 1, the renewed, is much weaker. Basically, 14 and 15-year-olds would be able to opt in. Parents would be able to opt in for them. The age verification goes away, and so it's more of a lawsuit litigation, file a claim on the back end if you have a kid who winds up being on social media instead of having to prove that you're old enough. That means that all the rest of us also would not have to prove that we're 18 in order to get on any of these platforms, which had been a part of the original HB1. So, yeah, it's going to get signed, and because it was done in conjunction with the governor's office, it's going to get signed. You already have the Net Choice people saying that they are going to challenge the law in court. It's more justifiable, more defensible in court, but it's also extraordinarily more weak, if you ask me, to the point of I'm not even sure it's worth doing. It's going to be something, but it's a, you know, 15% of what the original bill would do. Because, I mean, basically every parent, I would think, is going to opt in their kids. Because most people don't think social media is so bad. And because kids are going to say, well, so-and-so's got it, why can't I? And, you know, the average parent is, well, they had Instagram last week, why can't they have it this week? You know, I think that's what's going to wind up happening. And also, how do you verify that it's the parent? I mean, it's weak. It's Swiss cheese, if you ask me. 548 on News Radio 92.3, informative. local dependable. If you are a business owner and you have employees and you have to deal with HR and payroll and health insurance, dental, vision, life, and disability, and you love what you're doing right now and your employees are super happy, great. Keep doing it. On the other hand, if there's any way that you might be able to improve it, or if you kind of wonder if there might be a way to improve it, call Torgerson Causey and find out. Okay, we've been working with them for about 7 years. They're a comprehensive employee benefits agency for more than 25 years doing business here in this area. And we started using them, and they gave us better plans, better choices, and better customer service. I mean, seriously, it was great. Like, we didn't know it could be so much better. And it really has been ever since. And they've been fantastic. So if you want to find out if you're doing the best by your employees, if there's maybe a way to do it better, or you just need to talk to somebody for the first time because your business is growing, give them a call, 433-9996 for Torgerson Causey, or check them out online at tcbenefitsgroup.com.
Got a bug problem? Or worse, a rodent situation? Insect makes pest control for your home easy and effective. First, Insect thoroughly inspects the problem and provides you with a free estimate and a treatment plan. Then once on the job, Insect identifies targets and eliminates common household pests, including rodents, roaches, ants, and fleas, with guaranteed results. Insect's professionally trained technicians will safely and effectively eliminate pests inside and outside, while also taking preventative steps to stop other pests from infesting your home. Afterwards, a report with pictures will be emailed to let you know what was found and the work that was performed. To make it even easier, Insect offers annual and quarterly pest control services to stop pests from infesting your home. Guaranteed. Outside, inside, from inspection to treatment to follow-up. Insect Pest and Lawn makes whole home protection safe and easy. Just say no to bugs. Join the Insect family today online at insect.net. That's E-N-S-E-C.net.
This is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Join me Monday at 10 for the Chamber Connection Show. This week on the Chamber Connection, we'll be talking to Ray Palmer with Pensacola Sports. Ray will give us an update on all that's happening with the Sunbelt basketball tournaments and everything that Pensacola Sports is up to. So join us at 10 for the Chamber Connection.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate, managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. An IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help, from running your payrolls, submitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
Hi, this is Earl Ron. New South Window knows southern weather is unpredictable, and our Energy Star windows and doors will keep the heat in and the cold outside where it belongs. We prioritize keeping your family and your home comfortable all year round. Energy efficient products made, installed, and guaranteed for life. Get New South proud.
When you buy more, you can save more. Visit NewSouthWindow.com.
New South proud.
I'm Claire Stewart with the University of West Florida. Summer is just around the corner, and we are thrilled to offer Explore Summer Camps to provide weeks of fun and education for your school-age children to enjoy. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we share the many camps available this year and how you can get your campers signed up. Tune in this Thursday at 9 a.m. to learn more. That's Thursday on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3.
News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
Why don't you love me, Jenny? I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is.
Has won the Republican primary in Washington, D.C., making this her first win in the race and awarding her 19 more delegates. And she also makes history as the first woman to ever win a GOP primary.
Well, first and last. No, she's. I don't mean that as first and last woman. I mean, she's not going to win any of the other primaries, right? I was thinking about this. The only,
like, it doesn't even become viable. But let's say the Supreme Court rules today that President Trump is able to be disqualified from the ballot, and then, of course, would be required to be disqualified. You can't say it's an option for the states, right? He's either eligible to be on the ballot or he's ineligible to be on the ballot. And if they rule, which they're not going to do, that he is ineligible to be on the ballot, he's out, and it's Nikki Haley. I'm just saying, if that's what happens, I can't imagine they would say it's, well, it's up to the states to decide. That would be the worst of all the outcomes. Honest, I mean, that would be the bad outcome of saying he can't be would also be bad. But so they're going to rule that he's eligible. But if somehow it was sort of up to the states, well, all of a sudden you have a bunch of states that might decide, but not enough to make a difference in, you know, the only way that Nikki Haley wins is if something horrible happens to President Trump, wins the Republican nomination. Or if the Supreme Court were to decide that he's ineligible under the insurrection clause,
I guess.
4-3-7-60. Otherwise, she's just going to be the former governor and former ambassador who won a primary in Washington, D.C., where 90% of the people are Democrats, and where there were 2,000 votes cast. 2,000 votes. Oh, and by the way, just in case you're wondering, no, D.C., it's kind of weird. D.C. doesn't have any senators. They have one representative who cannot vote. They can talk. They can't vote. And then they get three electoral votes, so they do get to have a say in the presidency, but they don't get it. It's weird. D.C.'s status is really, really weird. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Malaysia's Ministry of Transport says the search for Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 may be revived. The 10th anniversary of the disappearance is approaching. The company Ocean Infinity is offering a no-find, no-fee search of the southern Indian Ocean seabeds. Of course, their last search ended about 5 years ago. The Boeing 777 plane disappeared from radar shortly after it took off in 2014, had 239 people on board. Massachusetts Air National Guard member Jack Teixeira expected to plead guilty today to charges related to the leaking of military secrets. There's a change of plea hearing scheduled in federal court in Boston. And the sentence for former Kansas City Chiefs assistant coach Britt Reed has been commuted. Missouri Governor Mike Parson announced that decision last week. Reed is the son of Chiefs head coach Andy Reed, pleaded guilty November 2022 to felony DUI in connection with a 2021 crash that left a five-year-old girl seriously injured.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 5:56 here on News Radio 92.3. What else do we have going on? Oh, this is kind of a neat thing. The Gulf Islands National Seashore announced on Friday, maybe it was Thursday, I think it was Friday. No, it was Thursday. That as of Friday, the new access areas on Perdido Key are open. And there's a half-mile multi-use trail now. There's seven new beach crossovers. Remember we told you about this last late summer, early fall, that they were closing down Johnson Beach for a lot of access and that they're going to be doing these, you know, massive construction projects. And $2.5 million later, and it's all open. I haven't gone there. But there were six new boardwalks along the road, one at the pavilion, three new paved parking areas to eliminate roadside parking, which has long been a problem on Johnson Beach. And again, a half-mile bike or pedestrian trail that's part of the old Johnson Beach Road that begins at the eastern point of the new parking area and continues to the roundabout at the end. Very easy to figure out from the yellow barricades so that you can't drive there anymore. Like I said, I have not been out there, but this is long kind. I haven't been out there since they finished this. It was Friday. Very, very new configuration for Johnson Beach for the Gulf Islands National Seashore Recreation Area. Those are a couple of words you don't want to have to say all right next to each other. 4-3-7-16-20. Speaking of sand, you're going to like this turn. You ready? Pace Girls Beach Volleyball Team. That is a professional level turn, right? I mean, that's a good segue. Anyway, the Pace Girls Beach Volleyball Team has begun its official season with a win. And Pace High Girls, they've got one court outside the high school where they used to, I guess, kind of practice and play and just get different exercise. And now they've got a team, PNJ, Ben Grieco, doing a good report. And they've had their first match. A match is five pair
pairs, playing each other. And it's, you know, typical scoring. You play best two out of three, quick score, if you know, rally scoring, as opposed to, like, maybe if you're old enough, you remember side out scoring, which nobody plays that way anymore. That's where you have to have the ball serving in order to score a point. Then nobody plays that way anymore. But, you know, it's good. It's really, really good. It's interesting because only Gulf Breeze and Pace have the teams. And Gulf Breeze has had it for a little while, but Pace has now added theirs. They can't play matches at Pace High because they only have the one court, and you need to have several courts to be able to do this. And also, beach volleyball, the similarities are sort of the rules and the net and the ball, but the playing of the sport is very, very different. Indoor versus outdoor, they are not easily crossover, and, you know, it's just they are very, very different sports and skill sets, even though they're obviously the same.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.